Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric, with my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
Don is on assignment this week. I hope to have him back relatively soon. So, little things to go over this week. A couple FAQs were dropped this morning by Games Workshop. We had several GT-level events over the weekend. We had an interesting discussion locally about our tournament scene and thought it was an isolated issue until we saw Bella Lost Souls had a key article on it on Monday morning. So Ray and I are going to talk about that at greater length. And of course, we'll have an update to your ITC top 10 and upcoming events at the end of the show. So let's start with the new FAQs. If we pull that over, and they are already up on the Warhammer community page. And it was kind of funny because everyone was excited. There's a big update for Space Marines. And went across, all across in a Grey Wolf, Grey Knights, Grey Wolves, good. Space Wolves, Grey Knights. Everybody got getting an update and everybody got all excited. And, well, it wasn't what you thought it was. It's still pretty cool, though. The first one for all Reaver squads, regardless of chapter. When they use their grapple hooks, they do not count a vertical distance when they move, so they can move vertical distance freely. That's actually a big deal. We'll talk about that later in the show. Also, when it comes to jump troops and the like, they also have made some subtle changes.
So what they did is they've basically made it where during the movement phase, the movement can move across models and terrain as if they weren't there. That has to do with any of the jump squads. So we're talking Inceptors, Assault Marines. For Grey Knights, it's the Interceptor Squad or anything with the personal teleporters, like the Dread Knights. So it's just a bit of a clarification on that. Nothing too major. In fact, it's very small.
Yep. So it's nice to see that. Other updates included in the actual big FAQ, they changed three of the abilities. So if you're looking at Codex Craftworlds, the Shift Shroud of Alan Sayre. And if you're looking at Tyranids, the Sporocyst Bombardment Organism, as well as the Myoptic Spores from the Forge World Fund for Tyranids. All three of them basically follow the typical Deep Strike rules. Enter the table, must be 9 inches away from any enemy unit.
More than 9 inches from the enemy deployment zone and enemy units.
Oh, yes, I missed that part. Hey, thank you, Ray. Appreciate that. So, made them more consistent with other models that have that similar ability. So, it's kind of nice to see that. The other big change that came in from the FAQ is the Orc Codex got their FAQ, and there were several changes there. I'm not going to go over all of them because a lot of them had to do with like individual war gear, knobs and you know, how many weapons they can take. Several of the weapons got upgraded. For example, the custom Luda Mega Blaster's damage is now up to T6 and a couple cleanup things. But the one that everyone has been talking about, though, is the clarification to the Grot Shield stratagem. And I'll just read it verbatim. Use the stratagem after a clan infantry unit from your army, excluding units comprised entirely of Gretchen models, has been hit by a ranged weapon. Until the end of the phase, you can roll a d6 each time an attack made with a ranged weapon wounds that unit. If there is a friendly unit comprised entirely of clan Gretchen infantry within 6 inches of the unit, and the Gretchen unit is closer to the attacking model than the target, on a 2+, the model of your choice in that Gretchen unit is slain in the attack sequence.
I don't like the word that those last few words there, because I can guarantee someone's going to sit there and say, "Well, I rolled a 2+, the Gretchen slain, and now the attack. Now you stop shooting."
Yeah, I'm not sure what that whole little thing at the end there. I was like, "Huh." So. It's a little odd there. What do you mean it ends? I'm still shooting here. So,
now correct me if I'm wrong. Did they change it where all the shooting in a unit is considered to happen simultaneously? That's how it works, right?
Yeah, from that unit. Yes.
Okay. So I think what they the way they probably should have put it is that the attack sequence, or they should just say that at that point that unit stops firing. Basically just saying that once you've done that, that unit's done. But even then, that's pointless.
Yeah, so that's all I can think of is, you know, it's just, yeah, once you shot at it, I don't think you can mix and match. Like, the only thing I can think of is the attack sequence is if you have mixed weapons in the shooting unit and you go, okay, this unit and that unit. So, for example, I fire my, you know, high volume, low damage weapon first, and then I fire my, like, my last cannon second. I don't know why you're firing a last cannon at orcs, but anyway, get my point. So, and the attack sequence ends. I don't know. I have to kind of play around with that a little bit further. Not really sure what that really means. So, there was another stratagem. We got an update, and this one's kind of flying a little under the radar because everyone's focusing on the one we just read, and it is quite powerful, but this other one is interesting. This was the looted stratagem. For those of you who don't remember this, this is the one where you use the stratagem when a vehicle is destroyed. Select an orc infantry unit from your army that was either within 3 inches of the vehicle or embarked within it when it was destroyed. Improve the characteristics of that infantry unit by one.
I've got a question. Mm-hmm. From what we've seen in orcs, at least in tournaments, are we seeing many vehicles that would be transports?
There are a couple thoughts in that certain cultures would benefit well from the truck. You know, the basic truck. I guess some of the newer vehicles are kind of underperforming as a transport. But from what I could see, we'll look at some of the other out-of-town tournaments. Our local tournament, there were a few vehicles here and there. But you also got to remember is it's also your opponent's vehicles. So orcs won't have any trouble killing a Venom or, you know, taking on maybe a Taurus or Torox or something like that. So kind of interesting how that all shapes up there. Yeah, I'll have to reread that stratagem more carefully because it says it's only changed the first and second sentence. So I have to see if the limit once per game is in the third sentence. So I don't have my orc codex directly in front of me, so I apologize. Interesting, you can mob up models with different cultures. But once they do that, they lose all the culture benefits. So I thought that was interesting. And they did clarify, Does the Grotz ability mean that units such as mech guns and killikans do not benefit from clan culture? Yes, they do not benefit from clan culture. Furthermore, orc stratagems can only be used on these units. They specifically state so the Grotz stratagem, shield stratagem. So the idea is that makes it very interesting. And it's one of those, a couple of the fans actually were responding to our chapter approved wish list. The biggest one I heard was that cultists are removed from the heretic Astartes, so that cultists could not benefit from chaos stratagems unless it specifically says for cultists.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, it makes a little bit of sense. You know, veterans of the long war, it's clearly tells me you're talking about space marines, not a bunch of rabble rousing rebels. So those are some of the big changes going on. Definitely hop on to the Warhammer community page for all news regarding to that. No other news at this point. There are a few smattering of rumors. They looked awfully salty coming out regarding what to expect in Chapter Approved. More we read on the more we're kind of not convinced they're for real. So we will hold off on reporting on those until we get a little closer to when Chapter Approved is supposed to come out. So we'll see what happens.
And unfortunately, nothing new for Gene Stealer Cult. I know they said that they would be coming out with all the codexes this year. At the same time, the last week or so, I've been hearing something about the Gene Stealer Cult codex not coming out until January or February. Part of what I've been hearing is that they've been having some difficulty balancing out the Gene Stealer Cult's deep striking ability with their I'm can't even remember what it's called right Cult now, but ambush. their That's it, Cult Ambush. Yeah, they're having some difficulty balancing that.
Well, I hope they... Sometimes it's worth the wait, so I hope they work that out. So, but as more news breaks, we'll have more updates as they come out. So in the meantime, we will go to break. When we come back, we'll go over last week's GT-level events in the ITC. Talk to you in a few minutes.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do Fantasy combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. So with our first full weekend of tournament action with the Orc Codex in hand, how will the green skins perform on the competitive circuit? Let's go around the ITC and see how they did. We're going to start off in merry old England, Lincoln to be exact, for the Imps Open 2018. Take a look at their top eight. Starting in eighth place, we have Sean Ingram with Tau Empire. Seventh place, Nathan Whitehead with Imperial Knights. And sixth place... sixth place, Alex Gins with Imperial Knights. In fifth place, playing Tyranids, it's Chris Dickinson, part of the Dickinson clan, which is a family of 40k players. I think they all play Tyranids. I know the father does, and he's been playing them for thousands of years. Fourth place, Mark Ward, playing Harlequins. And I can say that because I'm 1,000 years old, too. Third place, Simon Miller with Inari. Second place, Thomas... Oh, boy. Dausch, I'm assuming. I apologize, Thomas, if I mispronounced your last name. But he is playing Orcs. That's right. He went 4-1 playing Orcs. And in first place, your winner of the Imps 2018 is none other than... James McKenzie with Tyranids. So quick look at what a top Tyranid list looks like these days. It's very similar to the one we talked about last week with Nick Nativati. So take a look at what this is. Start off with a High Fleet Kraken Battalion, Old One Eye, and Swarm Lord. Two large blocks of Gene Stealers, looks like about 18 of them, plus another block of 20 Harmogants. In the Elite slot, you have six Hive Guard, two units of three Myoptic Suwars in the Fast Attack slot. Then you have a second battalion, also High Fleet Kraken, with two Tyrants and three unit of three Rippers. And then you have an auxiliary support detachment of High Fleet Kronos with a unit of Biovores.
I've got one more question. With the Gene Stealers, is it the Troop Gene Stealers or the Elite Gene Stealers?
Troop Gene Stealers.
Okay.
So very similar list to what we looked at last week. You've got the speed with the Gene Stealers. You've got the long range shooting from the Hive Guard. And Old One Eye is nothing to snooze at. He's quite capable of taking down some of the heavier models in the game currently. Looking at what James looked at, you know, what kind of armies he faced, round one, he went up against a interesting Death Watch army. You think they had to have had the tools to deal with a filthy Xenos player. Round two, he looks like he went against a knight list. It was almost a pure knight list. Castellan, a Crusader, a Gallant, and two Halverns. In round three, he went up against He went up another Tyranid player. Yes, that's why I got confused. And fourth, he went up against Nathan Whitebread, who we just talked about, playing Imperial Guard. With Castellan and two Gallants. And in the final round, he took down Thomas, who was playing Orcs. So let's take a look at his top Orc army coming in second. So what does competitive Orc army look like post-Codex? Starts like this, a Evil Sons battalion featuring a War Boss and a Weird Boy. Then he's got three units of boys. All of them pretty much maxed out. Two units of 30, one unit of 25, all with tank busted bombs, and two of the two larger units have knobs with Choppa and Slugga. Matter of fact, all his units were, so the two larger units were Slappas and Chuggas, and the smaller unit of 25 was just Shooters. In the elite slot, he took a Nob with a Wog banner and a Pain Boy. Fast attack, he took 30 Storm Boys. Then he starts a second battalion, looks like they are Bad Moons, with a Big Mech, a Weird Boy, 3 unit of 10 Gretchen, a Pain Boy, 2 units of Ludus, 1 unit of 10, 1 unit of 15, and then a unit of 3 Tractor Cannons. So this is actually fairly consistent what we saw over the weekend here locally. So you've got the Weird Boy for the jump, as well as Warphead, which is their version of Smite. Got to remember that they're able to get these spells off a lot easier because they have all these, they leech off all the bodies next to them and add to their spellcasting total. Yes, it puts them in danger for Perils of the Warp, but you're an orc. You just don't care about those sort of things. Other fun stuff, looks like it's the close combat will be from the Evil Sons, and the Bad Moons will stay back. So why the unit of Gretchen? That's the aforementioned screen we talked about. So they'll stand in front and absorb shots as the rest of the army moves forward. The Ludas will mob up to form a single unit of 25. And that way they can maximize their stratagems, such as more Daka. And the Tractor Cannons are just evil to flyers, and this there to take out all those Eldar flyers that are flying around these days. There you go, your first look at orcs. So let's see if that continues to be a trend through the weekend. So for our next tournament, we'll go back stateside. So we're going to zoom across to the West Coast through Fresno, California, to the 4th annual Hobbytown SmackDown Invitational Tournament. Not exactly sure what it took to get an invite, but my hat goes off to those people who did get in. And your top 8 looks something like this. Coming in for a tie for 7th place, you have Tyler Sherman with Necrons, tied with Miguel Jimenez with Imperial Knights. 6th place, Ulyss Sanders with Necrons. 5th place, David Singer with a Raven Guard. 4th place, Carl Matarag with Adeptus I can never get this. Sisters of Battle. I can never get that word out. Then 3rd place with Orcs. Yep, I told you they're going to make an impact. Andrew Helland. In 2nd place, Trevor Booth with Imperial Agents. And your 2018 SmackDown champion is Vincent Weibert with Tyranids. So back-to-back tournaments where Tyranids come up on top. What does this list look like? Very grainy, because he took a picture of the monitor. And ironically, it is almost point per point the exact same list. He swapped out the Biovores for Venomthropes. That's the only thing different. Curious what Trevor's Imperial Agents list looks like. He starts off with a White Scars Battalion with 2 Shield Captains, a Librarian, 3 units of Scouts, a Thunderfire Cannon. Then goes into a 2nd Battalion of Death Watch featuring a Librarian and a Watchmaster, a unit of Vanguard Vets, a unit of regular veterans, 2 units of regular veterans. Interesting, no mix of crazy, like, bikes and Terminators, just straight veterans with Storm Bolters and Chain Swords. 1 unit they did add, the Heavy Bolter and Missile Launcher. And then he adds a Vanguard Detachment of Inquisition, featuring an Inquisitor. With a Force Axe, Inquisitor Hector Rex, which is a Forge World character. Acolytes up to Wazoo. He's got like 1, 2, 3 units of 5, and then a Inquisition Land Raider Prometheus with 2 quad heavy bolters. I have a feeling many of his opponents are like, it does what? Trying to figure out what's in his list. All right, and then in 3rd place, we had our, once again, another orc player. Let's take a look at what's popular in this particular stateside. It's very similar to our previous list. We start with an Evil Sons Battalion. He's got a Warboss on Wartrike. That's the new model. He's got Zarchok the Ripper. I'm not sure who that is. He was a character of some kind. Anyway, he's got 1, 2, 3 units of boys. All 1 Slugga and Chopper. The other 2 are Shootas, all 30-man boy units. 3 units of Commandos. Looks like they are 1 unit of 3, 1 unit of 7, 1 unit of 12. And then he starts a second battalion, also... Since they're both Bad Moons and Snake Bites. I bet you they're Snake Bites. Not sure what they are. It's hard to tell. Two Weird Boys, three units of 10, Gretchen. And then a third battalion, also Bad Moons, featuring a Big Mech, a Weird Boy, three units of 10, Gretchen, and the aforementioned one unit of 15 Ludas and one unit of 10 Ludas. So already we're seeing a trend, Ray.
Was bound to happen.
Yeah, it seems to be the three units of 30 boys, and it's just a matter of their shooters or choppas and sluggas. You've got at least three units of 10 Gretchen to soak up things, and it seems like every list has their 25 Ludas ready to go. So I feel bad for GW because all those wonderful new vehicles, I haven't seen one yet in the list. One tournament we have not talked about yet is the There Will Be Blood GT. That was the event we ran this past weekend. We did not make our GT number. We fell quite a bit short, which we'll talk about a little bit later in our discussion. But there were several Orc players. I just kind of want to share some of the wackiness that was going on. We had an Orc player, Justin, who actually was 3-0 going into day one and then had some unfortunate family business to attend to on Sunday and had to drop out of the tournament. So, Justin, our thoughts are with you and your family. Just a quick look at his army. Also, starting off the battalion, War Boss on bike and three Weird Boys. He also had the Albatory, three units of boys, two units of 30 with Sluggas and Chapos, and then one unit of 10 with Anshutas. He also had three units of Gretchen, one unit of 30, two units of 10. In the elite slot, he took a unit of 14 commandos, a Nob with a WA banner, and then a unit of tank busters, 10-man strong. Fast attack, he took two Deathcopters, a Shock Jump Dragster, that's one of those new vehicles, and a unit of 20 Storm Boys, and then finally rounds out the heavy support slot with two mech guns, units, two smash guns, and a tractor cannon in each unit. We had another Orc player who had a very similar, except he mixed and matched in, let's see if I got his list. Yeah, I do actually, give me one moment. He managed to sneak in a Stompa. And it was interesting. I got to see a couple of his games. Yeah, Evil Sons. Again, War Trike, War Boss, large units of boys, unit of Nobs, which I thought was pretty cool. Pain Boy, War Bikers to help loop forward, unit of Ludas, and then threw in the Stompa at the last second. So other weirdness about our tournament, our second place player that took over for when Justin dropped out, he had the dropout before game five. So it just totally mixed up our top eight all over the place. So it was a really interesting event. Curious to see some of the... was glad to see everyone there, and we all had a really good time. And congratulations to Steve Riley for winning the event with Inari. So after the break, we'll go over the big one. That's right. The Renegade GT was this weekend. Give it its due with one of the big majors of the weekend. Back right after this. Welcome back after the break, and let's talk about the major event over the past weekend, the Renegade Open GT amp in Minnesota, I believe they are located. Give me one quick check. Plymouth, Minnesota. I'm not sure where that is in relation to Minneapolis, but super event, really creative mission design for those of you who are not familiar with it. You have four missions, and you get to choose which mission you are playing. When you come up to the table, the trick is that you cannot repeat a mission on the same day. So Ray may come up to me and go, I'm going to play this mission, and I choose a different mission. And I'm thinking I'm going to get a great matchup. And then I play in the second round and I go, ooh, I wish I could play that mission again, but sorry, I've already used it in game one. So you have to be smart with which mission you're choosing when looking at your opponent's list. Your top eight from the 2018 Renegade Open GT looks something like this. Starting in eighth place, Bran Townsend with Astra Militarum. Seventh place, Ryan Olson with Asuriani. In sixth place, Bradley Nichols with Tau Sept. Fifth place, Clyde Thompson with Adeptus Ministorum. Fourth place, making some big noise in the ITC top 10, Trent Northington with Inari. In third place, Colin Sherman, also with Inari. In second place, Tyler DeVries with Astra Militarum. And your 2018 Renegade GT champion is none other than Stephen Pampreen with, you guessed it, Orx. So let's take a look at what Mr. Pampreen's list is for Orx. It's pretty similar to what we've already been talking about. Starts off once again in Evil Sun's battalion. Orc Warboss, Weird Boy, three units of boys. One unit of Choppa and Slugga, two units of Shootas, all maxed out to the full 30. Also throws in some Tank Buster bombs for extra fun. In the elite slots, you got Pain Boys and not sure exactly how many commandos he took, but three units of commandos. Another Weird Boy, a Big Mech on Warbike. This is a Sarah, excuse me. It looks like he changed. Wow, this is really hard to read. Three more units of Grots, lots more Ludas, Boss Snickrot, another Weird Boy, and more Grots.
I'm just imagining that on his list, it actually says lots more.
Yeah, it's not quite. Parts of it get cut off. It's kind of like on a curve. Looks like he probably took a picture of the screen on his computer. So it just kind of curls off at the end. So I'm like, I really don't know what that's supposed to say. So
I do think it's kind of neat to see the Orcs. You know, it's their first role week after having been released and seeing a tournament, and they're in first place here.
It is neat to see that. Kind of expected some of it, as you know, the ideas, the tools you need to beat Orcs are not the same tools you need to beat Knights. And so far, everybody's been tooled up to beat Knights. So if you don't get that matchup, you know, it's basically bringing, you're expecting playing rock, paper, scissors. If you bring paper to beat rock and all of a sudden a scissor shows up, you're in trouble. I think that's what happened to a lot of players in a lot of these cases. Stephen Pampreen is obviously an ITC. ETC team member, so he knows what he's doing, but he's still playing with the new codex, so still learning as he goes along. But we're seeing that a lot. So how do you deal with that? Do you even have enough shots? I mean, now the one thing that I've been hearing is that Orcs are as fragile as ever. That's the one thing that did not get upgraded in the codex, but their firepower certainly has. So if you're used to your 7 or 8 Dark Reapers, or even 3 units there standing in the back with the Vrain, I'll just open fire. They have enough shots to blow you off the table. So you need something else. There's not enough Wave Serpents in the world to keep them all that safe. So they also are fairly fast with the jump. They're immune. They can actually turn 1, get into your face. A lot of the vehicles are pretty quick, so they can get to the crumpin really early. So, yeah, it's a lot of that first contact. So one of the thoughts, though, is if you've got one army like Orcs, being able to take on and people start shifting away, who are some of the other new alphas out there? So Knights are still kind of prevalent. They're still out there. We saw them at our tournament this past weekend. But, you know, starting to see also the rise of Tyranids because they match up well. And they have a great way of countering in there. So I'm curious to see what other codexes or factions kind of weasel their way into the void that's left by some of these new metas as it changes. Looking at the rest of the list, Tyler DeVries' list is your typical Astra Militarum list we've been seeing all along, with a Castellan and then a whole horde of bodies. The one thing I thought was interesting is he did add a small Sisters of Battle. Can't really tell if it's a... Oh, it actually is a battalion. It's a super small. So I thought that was interesting. No, excuse me. It's a spearhead. So basically a cannonist and then 3 units of retributors, all with heavy bolters. But the rest of it is all death core. Just tons of bodies and tons of mortars. So... And then in third place, you had Colin Sherman with Inari, and his list is pretty stock. So Shining Spears, Dark Reapers, Rangers, Spirit Seers, your Vrain, Farseer, Skyrunners, all that fun stuff. So not much has changed there. So we'll see how things alter. I think it's also interesting to see there are not a lot of big events coming up between now and LVO. So everybody's going to have a good 6 to 8 weeks to kind of get practicing on what this orc menace will bring to the meta. And as you mentioned, not sure if we're going to see Gene Stealer Cult in time. Any other thoughts, Ray?
No, I'm really excited to see what we see in the next, as we start seeing more tournaments come around. I definitely think that a lot of people weren't prepared for orcs to be that potential powerhouse that it's at least looking like this week. It'll be interesting to see with the kind of list that pop up to counter, as you put it, the orc menace.
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind is Death Watch. They got that pretty cool stratagem that, you know, for every wound taken, subtract one from their charge. You know, that's like, you know, during Overwatch. It's kind of a really cool idea. And because orcs, one thing that makes them incredibly powerful is they have so many ways to manipulate the charge roll. You know, right off the bat with the WOG, they can advance charge without penalty. And with Eerie Go, they can reroll one or both of the dice when it comes to a charge. So making even 7 or 8 or 9 inch charges is pretty routine for them. And to kind of put that in perspective, you roll the dice, you get a 6 and a 1. You're only rerolling the 1. So you're actually making a 9 inch charge on a 4+. As opposed to taking your chances and re-rolling both dice like a lot of other armies have to do.
Yeah, that is a pretty powerful thing to be able to do.
And that's pretty routine. And by the way, no cost to command points, no cost to any other. I mean, it's just stock. Go with it. I'm just like, it's crazy. I'm also curious to see if we see some other variants. You know, we're going to see the return of a mech wall army. You know, the whole mechanized list. Is that going to come back? There's quite a few variants that I've been hearing on other podcasts as well about various things you can do with orcs. And there's several key builds that can be made with the orc codex that are all very competitive. So we'll see which one rises to the top. But the ones we heard about today are the ones I've been hearing the most about, so I'm not surprised that those are the ones that we've seen the most of so far. All right, after the break, we'll get into our main discussion, and we'll talk about an interesting phenomenon we saw in our local area. And like I said before, I thought it was just our local area, and sure enough, it was a lead article on Belleflawed Souls. So obviously, this is something that is stretching across the entire community. We'll talk about that next. Welcome back after the break, and time for our main discussion this evening. So although we were running a tournament this past weekend, I was able to run into some of the other guys that run certain events, and there's a great team, What's New with Mike and Jeff. It's a video weekly, what would you call it, a video cast, a vidcast, YouTube video? How would you describe that, Ray?
I would say they cast on both YouTube and Facebook using video.
It's a great show. Keeps you up to date with all kinds of new products out in the hobby, and definitely much more hobby centric as opposed to a competitive area. So when they were running an event, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I was even offered out, hey, do you guys need any terrain? And it's like, I think we're expecting maybe 10 to 12 players for our event. And so their event was kind of billed as a low-key benefit. It's called the OG tournament. And the poster was awesome. It had a Space Marine using a walker. And it was kind of old and decrepit. And they used power level. And I think it was also mono faction, I think, was what the other requirement was. And it sounded like it would be a good time. Why is this topic worthy? Like I said, they are expecting 10 to 12 players to show up. 28 showed up. And I kind of looked at it and go, they got 28 players from there. And then I asked, well, looked at their roster, who showed up of the 28 players, maybe three of them were players that are part of our normal tournament circuit. So that tells me there are 25 players who would come to an organized event, but want nothing to do with tournament play. And I had kind of says, you know, it's kind of a shot to the gut for me. It's just like, what is it about tournament play that is turning these players off, and why is it dividing the community? So I thought maybe it was a local issue, and sure enough, that exact topic was right there, one of the lead stories this morning on Battle of Lost Souls. So I've been kind of racking my brain, what can I do to reach out to more players to make tournaments more user-friendly to the non-competitive crowd without diminishing the experience for the tournament players?
Well, I think a big thing is the the way that a lot of the non-tournament players see the ITC. It's become a fairly big tournament scene. They see a lot of players who they're looking at scores, they're trying to maximize scores, and not everybody looks at that and sees positivity behind it. Some people will quickly stereotype those types of players as the win at all costs player. And so while some of these players might want to play in a tournament, they look at the ITC and just think, that's not the kind of play I want to play.
Yeah, I was kind of furthering, break down, what is it? Was it specifically missions? Was it specifically, you said that you mentioned maximizing scores, so that to have that specter at the back of their mind? Because I don't know, sometimes when I hear these, you know, the narrative players don't want to win. Well, I don't think they want to lose either. And you know, this is funny, talking to another guy who he actually plays Blood Bowl, and he was talking about, oh yeah, I was playing this guy and he has a really good team, and I couldn't figure out how to beat him, so I downloaded the Xbox version of the game so I could practice. And I must have gotten like 60-70 games in, so I knew what I was doing. And I was so felt so good to win the game. It's like, oh, so did you ever go to any Blood Bowl tournaments? It's like, why would I do that? It's just like, what? What happened?
It's true that some people just don't like tournaments. I think you see different you see different kinds of lists when someone's at a tournament compared to your average player who's just hanging out with their friends and playing a game of 40K. I know a couple people who, when they're playing 40K, they build their lists off of a narrative. So you don't see a whole bunch of captains on the table. You see one captain on the table. You don't see multiple Chaos Legions on the table if in the stories they don't like each other. There are people who play like that. So they know that they're not going to do well in a tournament scene like the ITC. So they'd rather go to something that's a little lower stakes.
Okay. So one other thought then was, okay, it's a little lower stakes. Some tournaments or some events, I should say, like even like con level areas, may do something different where they have multiple events going on. Such as, you look at LVO, they have the 40K Championship and the 40K Narrative. I'm not a big fan of narratives. That's simply because I'm not a big fan of role playing. I feel like my experience with narrative games has always been me versus the game master. You know, our side's winning, we're doing well, and all right, we're going to change the story up to make it. It's like, what? And just to make it more exciting for both sides. And wasn't that fun? I'm like, no. Arbitrarily, a Warhound Titan suddenly appeared on our flank. Was it hiding behind the tree? I don't understand how that happened. So anyway, but I can see the, I don't want to be playing with, you know, I would like to play, and I'd like to play more games, but I don't want to necessarily have to swim with the sharks. So I get that. So looking at other tournaments, I know Nova, for example, uses their pod method, or it's a better way to phrase it, their groupings. And I actually enjoy that because although I am a competitive player, I also know that when I go to an event like Nova, the idea of finishing in the top eight there is going to take one heck of a run. And I definitely know it's okay. The pressure, it's the way that I'm looking at it. If I go 2-1 on day one, or worse, 1-2, I know day two I can rev myself up because I can at least win my bracket. And because what's going to happen is on day two, I'm going to play seven other players that also went 1-2. So at least I can go home saying, yes, I at least won my bracket. And that was my last experience at Nova last time I went. I won my bracket. Was it the top bracket? No, I wasn't even in the top half of the brackets. But I did well on my second day. So that's something I'm thinking of. That way, those players that are perhaps interested in playing but not at that upper level, they know that they're going to be kind of staying on a different track, but I don't have to worry about running multiple events at the same day.
Well, I think it's honestly, I think it's just a great idea for us to talk to someone who's been there. You know, we're both ITC players, and neither of us were at the event, so we don't really know what it was like there. We don't know we don't really know what the atmosphere was like, the kind of players that showed up. So I think it'll be great for us to talk to someone who was there, and they can tell us what the event was like.
Absolutely.
And so joining us is a member of our play group who, he plays in the ITC tournaments, but he also took part in this. All right, so joining us is Sla. He's a member of our group. He plays in the ITC, but he also took part in the friendly tournament that happened a few weeks ago. Sla? Yes, the OG tournament. Real quick, would you mind talking about how they had everything set up as far as like army listing and game, the different games were played?
Ooh. Yeah, absolutely. So basically, what they did was they decided to do a 50 power level game. And I talked to the guy that was organizing the event, Jeff, really nice guy. But because of the time constraint, decided to do power levels. So effectively about 1,000 points if you do some conversion work, right? As far as the actual army composition, battalion or patrol, doesn't matter how many detachments you got, as long as it falls into that criteria, which was actually kind of nice, honestly. Fairly simple, especially for people, getting back into the hobby. Now, as far as the missions themselves go, everything was open war based, which means they had decks already ready on the tables. You just shuffle it up, deployment type, objective, twist, etc. Now, as far as the scoring goes, that was the weird part. So he had a couple different criteria as far as how everything was scored. So you had the actual opponent judging one. So he gave you're going to play three opponents, so it gave you a rating. You rate each opponent 1 through 5, and you can only rate opponent with one number, period. So, first opponent might be a 3, next one a 4, last one a 2. And he mentioned do not use 1 or 5 unless it was the worst game you ever had, best game you ever had. That was similar to like how I actually kind of liked it because it really helped minimize the unfriendliness in the tournament, which was kind of nice. Now, as far as the actual scoring itself goes, there was two criteria. There was the actual win-loss criteria, so you either win, you lose, or draw, which was tallied separately for the tournament score. So he had the tournament score as well. The tournament score was separate from completely something different. You had first blood, which was first wound dealt, which means you shoot somebody, You do a wound. If you do a wound, you get it. Which was really weird. It wasn't first strike. It wasn't the classic first blood. It was literally do a wound. That was a little bit weird. Was a little too easy for some armies to do. But, you know, I digress. Then you had Warlord kill. You had units kill, like characters, I guess. And then you had units based on power level. So I think it was 5 and under was 1 point. 6 through 8 was 2 points. Or 6 through 9 was 2 points. And then 10 and up was worth 3 points. So he tallied points like that. It was kind of similar to how ITC, you can pick your objective and then you get points based on that. It was actually pretty nice support for the first blood. But yeah, that was essentially the scoring mechanism and the army composition when as far as the tournament goes.
All right. Was there any limit on factions?
Actually, there was no limit with the exception of army composition. So you couldn't run, assassins. You couldn't run Inquisition, which he said he would make an exception for like Inquisition because you can only take elites. But because of the way it was, I guess because it was battalion or patrol, you couldn't bring knights. You couldn't bring Lord of the War. There was no, mix and match, no soups. So, you know, single codex. You got Necrons, you got Necrons. You got Eldar, it's Eldar. Dark Eldar, Dark Eldar. There was no soups, I guess. So it was fairly straightforward, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. What kind of environment did you see there compared to when you go to the ITC tournaments?
You know, it was actually really interesting. So you saw 95% of the people that played there are almost never like at an ITC tournament. Like we're talking people I've never seen before, like, and people coming from like Flagstaff to play. It was mostly like old timers, but there was newer people there too as well. There were some familiar faces as well, but as far as it was excitement. Everyone was excited. Everybody was happy. There was a couple ITC players, which, you know, it's a tournament. It happens. First match I did. Ooh, that was rough. Oh, man. That was a rough match. But for the most part, I would say it was a really, really, really friendly, super casual environment. And like me, I went in with the most like, hey, I'm going to bring a list for fun, not for turn. I brought Rubik Marines, Scarab Occult Terminators, and that was essentially my army. Didn't do well in the first round. Second round, I won. Third round, I literally had a draw with another 1,000-some player. Ironic. But yeah, it was fun. You should have been there, Ray. It was great.
Yeah, there are a lot of tournaments I wish I could attend right now.
Yeah, I know.
So did you, at any point, did you talk to any of these people who you had never seen before and ask maybe why they don't go to ITC tournaments?
So it was actually funny that you mentioned that. A couple of players were like brand new to the game. So this was their first tournament experience. They were more worried about, hey, what do I do in the ITC? There's a lot of rules. There's all this. I'm like, it's not that bad. You know, ITC is fairly simple, fairly straightforward. It's just a little bit different from the book. And I think that's why they went with the open war stuff, you know? Now, a couple of the players, like the first player I played was an ITC regular, Mr. Mark. Great fella. Great game on his part. But, you know, it's still a tournament, and you're still there to win, right? But I think that's probably what keeps a lot of the players, especially like my second player opponent, you know, keeps them from going into the tournaments because you want to go there for fun versus to win. You know, like you don't want to go there to destroy your opponent completely. That's why I went to it. I went to it just to have fun.
Sure. So you mentioned, okay, there's a kind of the fear of the ITC at this point. Mm-hmm. Is it more fear of the unknown or just something they just don't want to deal with?
Well, you know, it's actually a very good question. I think it's a little combination of both. The big thing that probably makes people afraid, I think, is actually more of the opponents. Like, you don't know who you're going to get. You might get somebody that's, like, super focused, you know, no joking around. I do this, I do that. You know, this is what this does. And you just go straight into the match, and there's no, like, banter, you know? There's no, like, joking around. It just bam, 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 done, you know? I think that's kind of part of the reason a lot of the players don't really play the ITC, because they're afraid of that, you know?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. One of the things was, okay, so the banter is kind of an issue. Perhaps it's also, you know, we were trying to think of ways to kind of bridge the gap, you know, because that's one of those, when you think about that, is you've got, you know, ITC event, we had a mid-20s of players. This event had 20. How do you get these two groups together?
You know, it's actually, I'm glad you asked. So I think it's more promotional than anything. So I would say, if anything, maybe have like a newbies ITC tournament, you know, like, hey, this is your first ITC tournament. Maybe like promote it like that. That's the only thing I can think of. Cause I mean, a lot of people that play ITC tournaments right now, it's the same faces. You go to any of these tournaments, you're going to see the same 15, 20 people, right? You're not going to see new people. Maybe branch out, you know, put a poster. Hey, we're doing a special event. You know, everybody's welcome. It's a little bit more casual. Maybe even do a restriction. Maybe you say, hey, it's battalion only. We're doing a newbie ITC tournament. You know, like, okay, Bring them in that way, casually.
How much do you think it was the 1 day versus the 2 day event?
Well, 2 day events always drain you. 1 day events, love them. 2 day events, I love them because I get to play 40K. My back doesn't love it. And then, you know, 3 day events, God help us. But absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. Just, you know, you're done with the game. There's no game the next day. You can just sleep all day.
Fair enough. In terms of, you know, one of the things we all talked about is, you know, tournaments in general, one thing's whether competitive or non, is, you know, bringing the hobby back. That was one thing that's, did you think the hobby was more on parade at this particular event compared to other events?
Okay. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I only saw maybe like 3-4 armies that weren't 100% painted. Like 90% of the armies were fully painted, based, etc. And they actually did the painting, like, judging, I think, it arguably better than what the ITC does. So they have three criteria, right? They had the best painted model. They had the best painted based on, like, choice as far as, like, the players go. And then they had the judge's choice. So model was, you know, best single model in the event. One of the Tyranids guy won it. Gorgeous model. Absolutely one of the best painted Tyranid models I've seen. It was a custom Hive Titan or something like that. Then we had, you know, our personal picks. So, like, I picked this old school, like, super, like, second edition Space Marine army, but it was painted, like, modern style. Beautiful. But you pick three, and then they tally up who has the most votes, right? Absolutely fair. You know, it's, there's no bias behind it. And then, of course, judges, they go around, you know, 3-4 judges, they pick everything, and then whoever picks the best one goes from there.
Okay.
But yeah.
You mentioned there's also sports. So in terms of like awards at the end, I saw that on the poster, that quite a few. Tell us a little bit more about some of the awards they gave out.
So it's funny. The first award was a walker, you know, because it's old guy tournament. They had an actual walker.
I actually saw it. I kid you not. What's that doing there?
So. It was great. They had some joke prizes. One of the prizes was, who's the oldest person here? So they go, you know, 25, 30, 45. I think the guy, the one, I think it was Tim. It gave him, what do you call this? The vitamins, like a vitamin bottle. Gorgeous. It was perfect. Then there was the door prize, which was literally a door. And they're going to do it every time there's an event. One person's going to win. And it was a raffle prize. Kind of cool. You win it, you sign a door. So they literally have a screen door and you sign it. I was like, okay, that's cool. Now, as far as like first place and second place and all that, they didn't really go over what the prize amount was. But there was a prize for best painted model, best painted like player's choice. I think there was a best, like the most friendly person. And then there was best general and best overall player. So I don't know how – I think what they did for the best overall player was a combination of tournament points and then win-loss draw points. And best player was win-win-win or win-loss win or whatever. I think effectively first and second place. But I didn't see actual numbers as far as like how much they won. That was the only thing I didn't see. But there was quite a few raffle prizes too. Terrain pieces and – like bases and all that. Small prizes. People loved it. It wasn't big, but it was like, hey, here's a raffle ticket. Okay. You want something.
So being that you've been to our ITC events numerous times, what can we do a better job of getting these guys to come to those events?
Well, honestly, like, and, you know, this is no disrespect. You know, Eric, I respect you. I think what the biggest thing is maybe even do something like a raffle, like these kinds of raffles that they do. It doesn't have to be anything like expensive. You know, get some tickets, raffle it out, make a, like, more of a, like, do some silly things occasionally, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, take a ticket, you know, between lunch. We're going to do a raffle right before the second round. Hey, you won some bases or you won this, you know, character model or whatever, you know, kind of like that. It might promote, I don't know. Like maybe some more of a warmer environment. Also, terrain. I gotta tell you about that. I love what you do, Eric. But if you saw what I saw at the OG tournament, your brain would explode. Oh my god! Every single table was thematic, and we're talking a little bit cluttered, honestly. But every single table was completely thematic and completely different. We're talking, you know, mechanical world. We're talking like a desert city, green forest or whatever. Not that I'm complaining, because I love your terrain, but this was super narrative. It was different beyond what you would see at an ITC. I don't know if that would bring more people in, but it's definitely a narrative aspect.
Well, definitely the immersion is a big thing, and I definitely agree. You know, it's one of the things we talked about this weekend with our current crowd is, okay, not only does the terrain need an upgrade and a facelift, it just, I mean, it's some of those pieces are over 6 years old, and they're just showing, you know, wear and tear, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some of those pieces for quite some time.
Second thing, too, just kind of a little off tangent, a lot of the guys that were at our tournament this past weekend just came back from SoCal, and they redid their terrain. So it's like, okay, what did you guys like about it? What didn't they like about it? So I got a lot of constructive criticism. And in terms of what the 2019 terrain will look like. And I'm looking forward to doing that project. But yeah, I hear what you mean about the thematic. I think ours originally started off as themed. And some parts of the theme were more durable than others. So
yeah,
it's foam. Some of them were other materials that just didn't work. Other things too, sometimes I have to do a little editing. Appreciate people being helpful, but why'd you put the lava terrain on the grasslands mat? Can we move that?
No, yeah. It makes sense. You know, so. You do a lot of hard work, Eric. I mean, I personally appreciate it anytime you do this. It's an ITC, and without you there, we wouldn't have any terrain. So I think it's a big part, you know, what's the saying? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You know, not that I'm calling you a horse.
No, but I get it. It's definitely more functional than pretty. So step it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I think it's still pretty, but, yeah. You know, I did actually have one question for you. So you mixed up the terrain. It wasn't this, you know, typical, you know, two big pieces in the middle, corner, mountains. How did that actually play out?
That's an excellent question. So, yeah, the biggest feedback I got was break it up from what I always use was the Nova template. So every table is the same, and people complained about it. So it's like, all right, let's mix it up a little bit. And sure enough, the overall was It was great to have variation. However, there were sometimes certain tables were great until you got the wrong deployment zones. So, for example, one of our tables, we'll take the lava board, for example. Instead of having ruins in the middle, it had four columns of, like, mountainous columns with lava pouring off of them. So they had, so it blocked off line of sight pretty well, and it had this, like, center chamber. But, boy, if you had the, was it the pointy hammer and anvil, so you can get up real close real fast, it got ugly fast. You know, people who just would, especially if there's an objective on board center, first unit get in there, they held on, and now they've got line of sight blocking terrain on four sides. I got it. You know, hey, was a bad match. And that's the thing I was trying to avoid, is I would have won any other game if it had been on a different table. But for the most part, a lot of players were saying, if I had a little more practice, it may have been a different outcome. So I think what I may do is kind of compromise and go, there will be three layouts, maybe four, of terrain. Every table will have the same terrain pieces, you know, in terms of footprint and style and size. It just, they may be in different spots. So hopefully through the randomness of table draws, you'll eventually get to each of the different types of terrain layouts.
You know, to piggyback off that, because that's actually fairly true. One of the guys, he was talking about how he did the grand tournaments back in the day, right? Which are like the old GW, like, whatever. One of the things he said, and it kind of stuck with me, he's like, there are three things you got to, you know, focus on when it comes to actual 40K. List building, how you play, and how you deal with the terrain. Because terrain plays a big part of the actual battle. It's not just, oh, my army is the best at shooting. Well, how do you deal with stuff that blocks line of sight? So I kind of feel like in that regard, yeah, the criticism is fair, you know, for deployment type. But at the same time, work around it, you know?
There is. And it's, but I think the, what's the word I'm looking for? What I don't want is a gotcha experience. You know,
yeah,
we definitely have a reputation. I've heard it from even another podcast where they go, yeah, when you go to Arizona, you better plan on working around this because they have more terrain. And likewise, there's other tournaments. People say, yeah, if you're not on table eight or higher, expect to have like a barren wasteland. And so consequently, certain lists don't get played as much. So yeah. So but I definitely remember there's a mutual friend of all three of us. You know, he came to he plays every Friday night, part of our group, and showed up for a tournament. And that Friday night, we're setting up the terrain. He's like, what the hell is all this? And because his army is, I sit with my super heavy in the corner and shoot everything. And like, well, there's plenty of, now you can't see the entire board. You might be in a bit of a pickle. And exactly what happened to him.
Was it our mutual renegade night?
No, it's our mutual, what's the Eldar super heavy Cobra tank?
The Cobra?
He was upset that he couldn't sit in the corner with his Cobra and shoot at things while the Rangers hold down objectives around the table.
You know what? Not to knock anybody on that, but hey, you know, if what's the point of putting terrain if you can see the whole map? Like, might as well just get rid of everything, you know?
So I just kind of laughed at it when, yeah, well. But at the same point, yeah, you don't want to run into, okay, game one, I was playing in Nebraska. In game two, it was a city fight game. I was like, oh, you know, that doesn't quite work either. My favorite story is still the showed up for a tournament, and there's at least 25 people in the parking lot. And I'm like, this thing's supposed to start in 10 minutes. What's going on? And they're still setting up. So I figured out somebody just slept in and, you know, didn't forgot the keys to the store or whatever happened, right? They opened what had happened was they saw how many people were in the parking lot and go, yeah, we don't want a wait list. We want to make sure we collect all these guys' money. So they went back and they changed all the 6-foot by 4-foot tables and made them into 4-foot by 4-foot tables.
Wow.
So they can get everybody in. They didn't change the army, so I'm still playing with a 2,000-point army, which had a lot of deep strikes, so now I'm worried about scattering off the table. It was a mess. It was just a complete disaster. So,
well, you know, unlike a lot of people, Eric, you do plan ahead. And you know what? You coming in the night before, usually setting it up with Don, or, you know, if I'm there, usually help you set it up. It does really help in that regard. I appreciate it. But I think that's hilarious. That's funny. I've never heard that story. That's pretty funny.
I think the guy next to me in one of the rounds, it was Blood Angels versus Korn. And it was just like 4 foot by 4 foot tables. I'll meet you in the middle. And it was just in a last battle standing one. It's ugly. It was like, what the heck is going on here? So,
oh, hey, we're playing fantasy, huh?
Yeah. All right. So break the fear, perhaps educate, start with some introductory events to help build up the community. That all makes sense. It's been a while since we've had an introductory event in our area. We did so when 8th edition first dropped, but that was a year ago now.
2 years ago?
Two, yeah.
Two, I think.
So,
no, not two. Not two.
Has it?
No, it's only been one.
Well, it feels like two, so
hold on.
That might be part of the perception problem there. So, all right. So that's helpful to go from there. I think interesting here that, you know, the build, but it's interesting to hear that it's not an issue. It's not a entry cost issue. People have the armies. It's just a matter of playing what they want to play in an environment they enjoy.
There is actually one other problem I heard as far as complaints go. And it's not actually even necessarily the ITC itself. It's the oversaturation of tournaments. So specifically, we had an ITC, yesterday? Yep. We had the OG tournament the week before, and we had the SoCal the week before that. So that's three weeks in a row, which is, you know, a little ridiculous, just bad luck in that regard. But I think it's the oversaturation of tournaments. And that's from what I'm hearing from people, that there are too many tournaments and you can't go to all of them. So, you know, if there's four tournaments in a month, a person's going to go maybe to two tops. Problem is, if you have 40 people, what do you do?
Right.
You know?
And I think you hit it on the head. We're looking at perhaps scaling back the number of tournaments we do, and that way adding room for some of these specialty events. Other thing too is a lot of our events did not didn't grow. I think is a better way. They still hit their numbers, but didn't grow simply because the guys that traveled to our tournaments now have the option of going to local tournaments, whereas they didn't have local tournaments in their area.
Yep.
So before it was, they're like, why go to a local tournament? Because only 8 people showed up. Well, now when 16 people show up at their local tournament, I don't have to travel as far. So
exactly. There were some numbers we were crunching, and I think the best way is 4 GTs a year and then just mix in some RTs in between. You know, you get your GTs filled up through the year, and then you have your RTs, you know, hey, you only need, 20 people for an RT? Bam.
Yeah, so some of the things we're looking at as well, and we like similar to the smaller events, like we did that 1,000-point speed dating tournament. Yep. You know, bring something like that back again. just some of the ideas there. Just, I think you're right. Just mixing up the experience a little bit. So, and all right, well, so all good feedback. So, this, and I think it's something that can be duplicated in any market. So, if you're listening to this, you don't have to be in our neck of the woods to make this work. I think you can work just about in any local area.
All right. Well, now, do you guys have any other questions about the actual OG tournament? Anything you want to know?
Yeah, what you bring? Yeah.
What I bring? So funny you ask. I brought two Rubik squads, 5-man squads, a Scarabacol Terminator, Armin, and a Demon Prince. That was my 50 power level, which isn't really fair for me because it was like 400 or 860 points, and then I was playing somebody that had effectively like 1,300 or 1,400 points worth of upgrades for free. Don't do power level. Do not do power level. It's fun for a pickup game, but when you bring it into a tournament environment, you're gonna have somebody bring, you know, Devastator squad with 4 Last Cannons, and it costs the same point as a Devastator squad with four bolters. It causes problems. A lot of problems.
To be fair, by picking Thousand Suns, you're also picking, you know, one of the ones that are, when it comes to power level, they're a little on the higher end.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. They kind of are. Until, so, just to get a little bit of background why I brought Rook Marines, they're fully painted and based. So I wanted a fully painted based army, right? I could have brought my Zangors, done that. I would have had like 1,300 points with Zangors because they're so cheap. It would have been like, oh, hey, here's Zangors. You know, run your opponent down. I only brought it because I was like, I want to have fun games, make it look pretty. I could go the whole power level route with cultists and Zangors and all of that stuff. And, you know, it'd be fair. But at the same time, you know, armies like Necrons, power level doesn't work for them at all.
Hopefully that's something they address in chapter approved this coming month.
Cross our fingers, you know. But yeah, don't run power level in tournaments. It's ripe for abuse.
I do think that the same could be said for the point system, but I do think that they focus more on fine tuning the points than they do power level.
Yeah, let's look at it from like power level to points perspective. Let's say a Tyranid army. One of the things that they do really well is you're able to upgrade units with like a lot of extra upgrades for points. What is it? Adrenaline glands, toxin sacks, devourers, etc. You can add an extra 40 points per model or close to it to like a basic warrior squad or a Turbogon squad with just all those upgrades. And it doesn't cost anything more in power level. That's where it becomes a problem.
Right, I'm saying that, you know, with power level, what you have to do is you have to assume that there's going to be at least a certain amount of upgrades taken just automatically because you don't have to worry about fine-tuning some of those.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a case of them just needing to spend a little bit more time on considering how much power level, you know, this or that unit's going to be. And we definitely don't see that compared to what we do with points.
Oh, I agree. The way I like to put look at power level is, if you remember 7th edition, Adeptus Mechanicus had, detachment, where they got the upgrades for free?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You remember that, right?
I know you're talking
War Convocation.
That's what it was. You remember how everybody complained that they got everything for free, right? It's like, Hey, you know, we're playing 2,000 points, but you have, what, 600 points or 700 points of upgrades for free? That's the problem with power level. It's the same idea. It's great for these kinds of tournaments, though. It's great for, like, casual tournaments, but you're adding the word tournament to it, which means people will abuse it. It becomes more of an issue of trusting your players, your participants in tournaments, not to do that. And unfortunately, you can't really do that in a tournament. It's the whole purpose of it is competitive. So I think that was the big problem I had with the actual OG tournament. You have a casual tournament, which is an oxymoron when you think about it.
Did you see people abusing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, you know, love the guy, great guy, awesome person. First list I played, I did one wound. It was fully upgraded Tyranid squad or Tyranid warriors with every upgrade you can think of. Fully upgraded, what do you call those? The ones that don't need line of sight, Hive Guard?
Yep, Hive Guard.
Those they
yep.
are. Yeah, don't need line of sight. You know, fully upgraded everything. Carnifex, oh, two Twin Devourers. It's like, all right, I got my five Rubik guys. I'm going to shoot you with five Bolter shots. Oh, I'm taking 20 line of sight ignoring, cover ignoring shots. Okay. And they're fully upgraded. That's 50 power level. All right, good game. Yeah, it was so one-sided. I mean, again, but it's a tournament. I should have expected that, you know?
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, especially on such short notice, Sla. Appreciate the insight. We'll definitely be making some changes in our local area. And if you guys have any additional ideas, let us know on our Facebook page. And after the break, we will go over your ITC top 10. Welcome back after the break. Your ITC top 10 for this week. Starting in 10th place, a newcomer to the ITC top 10 is Christopher Wright, coming in at 633 points. In 9th place from Arizona, Daniel Olivas with a 4-point lead, holding on to the 9th spot. 13 points ahead of him is Archon Skari, holding down the 8th spot. In a mere 1-point lead over Archon Skari is Joshua Death, recently rocking a Harlequin list for the last few tournaments he's been out. 2 points ahead of Joshua Death is Brandon Grant, your SoCal Open champion from this year. Then we have a huge lead here of 22 points. Nick Rose holds down the 5th spot. Matt Rutt holds a 19-point lead over Nick for 4th place. Trent Northington, who we talked about earlier, holds down the 3rd spot with a 5-point lead over Matt Rutt. And then another gaping lead here. Mike Porter from London, England has a 45-point lead over Trent Northington, but he's still 11 points behind your current leader. Nick Nadavati holding down the top spot at 755 points. Ray, what events do we have coming next weekend?
Well, due to the Thanksgiving holiday here in America, there's not really a lot of tournaments happening. In fact, in America, there are no GT level or higher events scheduled as of right now. The only event at that scale listed in Best Coast Pairings is the Vic 40K Masters at the House of War in Ringwood, Victoria, and that's in Australia.
I don't think they have Thanksgiving in Australia. I don't think they have turkey in Australia.
It's kind of a America-only holiday for the most part.
Actually, speaking of funny stuff, though, I heard this on a morning show. They were interviewing Hugh Jackman when he first got the role as Wolverine. And if those of you don't remember, it was supposed to be DuGray Scott was originally got the role. And they had actually started filming, and somehow they still don't know the exact answer why, but Hugh Jackman was brought in, DuGray Scott was sent packing. And being the method actor that Hugh Jackman was, he said, okay, you're playing the role of the Wolverine. He's like, oh, he never read the comic books, didn't know much about the storyline. So apparently he did all this research on wolves. And so there's a scene where he's supposed to be using his scent power to track down villains and whatnot. And he's doing this weird head motion, and Bryan Singer, the director's like, Hugh, what are you doing? He says, well, wolves, you know, they actually, when they use their noses, they make this upward motion. And it's like, well, that's great and all, but you're Wolverine. Says, that's a real animal? Yeah. Oh, I thought you guys made that up for the comic book. So he was... He had no idea, because there's no such thing as Wolverines in Australia. So he kind of did a quick little research and was thoroughly embarrassed by that moment. But yeah, so not only this, so no turkeys and no Wolverines in Australia. That was the whole point of
it. You know, actually, Australia has its very own, quite unique group of animals.
And one of the most deadliest. Oh my gosh, everything out there is out to kill you. But if you're not dead from following the fauna in local Australia or licking a cane toad, look that one up. That's a great movie, by the way. Take a wander over to iTunes and leave us a review. Your reviews help spread the word and get us closer to the top of the iTunes subscription page. Let us know how we're doing, things that we can do to improve things. Can't make the show better if we don't know what's going on. In the meantime, we'll look for our future updates on our Facebook page at Exterminatus Podcast. For this week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.